And welcome to this webinar hosted by Innovation Forum in London in partnership with the Accountability Framework and Forest Trends Supply Chain Initiative. I'm Ian Welsh and I'll be your host for the next hour or so. Today we're going to be case studying tools from the Accountability Framework and supply chain that are designed to help business deliver on supply chain commitments. The past couple of years have seen rapid progress in the emergence of norms and best practices for setting and implementing commitments to eliminate deforestation, ecosystem conversion, and human rights abuses from supply chains. There has also been a proliferation of tools and approaches for the evaluation of company progress and performance. In this webinar, we'll discuss how companies can use the Accountability Framework and supply chain tools and platforms to deliver on commitments. We'll also assess how they can accurately and effectively measure and demonstrate that success. And speaking from Western Europe, where temperature records are being broken as we speak, all these issues relating to climate change feel particularly pressing. So I'm delighted that joining me today, we have Dr. Leah Sandberg, Staff Scientist with the Rainforest Alliance and the Accountability Framework Initiative, and Philip Rothrock, Senior Associate with the Forest Trends Supply Chain Initiative. And my thanks to Leah's and Philip's colleagues and my Innovation Forum colleague, Tanya Richard, for their work to convene our panel today. And the issues we're covering just now will also be part of the discussion at Innovation Forum's next Sustainable Landscapes and Commodities Conference in London in November. Full details of the impressive participant lineup and how to attend are on the Innovation Forum website, and the link is in front of you on your screen right now. Okay, I will shortly invite our panelists to make some opening remarks to kick things off. We will then have some follow-up discussion, and I will then open the debate up to audience questions during the second half of our hour in particular. I do want to hear from you all, so please submit questions at any time using the questions box on the webinar dashboard, and I will put them to our panel. Questions can be directed to both our panelists or to one in particular, and if you can keep your questions short and to the point, it is more likely that I will use them. Listeners, please note that as we are discussing some case studies today, in a departure from usual Innovation Forum webinars, we do have some slides, which we will share with all registrants when we send out the webinar recording. So, turning to our panel. Leah, perhaps you can start and give us some background to the Accountability Framework and how it can be used to strengthen and accelerate company commitments.
Great. Thanks, Ian, for the introduction and for hosting. I think it's probably a great opportunity to familiarize some more people with some of the tools that the Accountability Framework Initiative and Supply Chain are bringing to this conversation, and also discuss the ways in which collaboration between our initiatives has an ability to bring some greater clarity and consistency for all of our work. So many, I hope maybe most of the audience has at least heard about the Accountability Framework at this point, but we realize that it's also both new and quite large and expansive. So I'm just gonna give a bit of a high level overview of what's in the framework and how it can be used to help companies make and measure progress towards their agricultural and forestry supply chain commitments. So in response to the clear concerns that Ian raised in his introduction, hundreds of companies over the past decade have made commitments to eliminating deforestation, ecosystem conversion, and human rights abuses from their supply chains. However, as many have noted, there's an implementation gap between commitment and outcomes. And so deforestation, human rights abuses, and other problematic supply chain practices remain. So in addition to this implementation gap, accountability for implementing these commitments is hampered by a lack of consensus on how to measure and evaluate progress towards these commitments. And companies both face few consequences for failing to act on commitments, but also don't have a consistent or commonly accepted way to communicate their progress and their success. So the Accountability Framework Initiative grew out of this need by companies to define good practice related to these commitments in a consistent and commonly accepted way. So there's a lack of consensus on how to measure progress, which really limits accountability, where you have a company and you'll get two very different takes from different scorecards on the extent to which a company is or is not fulfilling its commitments. And this really creates a lack of ability to measure progress and to move forward. So in response to this need, the Accountability Framework was developed. So the Accountability Framework Initiative is a collaborative effort to accelerate progress and improve accountability for supply chain commitments in agriculture and forestry. The Accountability Framework itself is designed to bring common definitions, norms, and guidance to bring clarity, consistency, effectiveness, and accountability to the implementation of these commitments. And I think there's a lot of discussion and out there about what the Accountability Framework Initiative is and what it isn't. So we've developed some clarification on that front. So what the Accountability Framework is it's a global public good intended to be used as a resource by companies and by others. It's not a commercial product, a service, or anything proprietary. It's a set of norms and best practices for setting, implementing, and monitoring and reporting on company commitments. It's not a certification program or a standard. And it's working, as we'll discuss quite a bit today, to align monitoring, reporting, and assessment initiatives and tools rather than conducting its own assessment, rating, or benchmarking of company performance. All right, next slide, please. So the accountability framework is intended to be used across commodities, regions, and supply chain positions. Topically, the scope covers a set of topics that are the focus of many corporate commitments, including eliminating deforestation and conversion of other natural ecosystems, respect for human rights, and support for livelihoods. Geographically and in terms of commodities, again, it's really intended to be globally applicable, but of course, the focus is on a set of commodities and a set of geographies where a lot of our global focus is when it comes to deforestation. So we're working closely on the ground with partners in a number of these key producing geographies with a focus on specific commodities in specific regions. So the who is behind the accountability framework? And this is in many ways the most important aspect of the framework itself. The need that we were responding to in setting up the framework was a need for consensus. And that's really what the AFI provides. The framework itself is led by a coalition of civil society partners, all of whose logos you'll see here. And the framework itself, everything in it is a consensus effort by these organizations who have all given full sign-off on the full content of the framework. So this really does represent the position of a number of leading environmental and human rights organizations globally. We also consulted very widely on this. We had about 30 more organizations and topical working groups, other implementation protocols. We've been in contact with national, regional, and jurisdictional organizations, reporting and assessment initiatives, investment initiatives, certification systems, consultations in producing regions, and consultations with companies. So it's really been a process of gathering global best practice, global consensus, and that's really a lot of the strength of what this framework can bring to the table. So what's in the framework? The AFI is divided into three sections on setting, implementing, and demonstrating progress towards commitments. And the core expectations of the framework are laid out in 12 core principles across these three sections. Next, thank you. So these core principles first discuss what is included in a robust commitment to forest and ecosystems and human rights, the key stages of implementation, and monitoring and verification and reporting. So those core principles are then elaborated and supported by a set of operational guidance documents, which provide detail on the best practices for these principles. These are sort of an example of a few of the pieces of operational guidance, but there are many more. But for example, on implementation in smallholder contexts, on supply chain management, on the use of FPIC. So we really try to provide a full range of guidance to support implementation of these core principles. Finally, the framework includes an extensive set of definitions clarifying key terms found in the principles and the guidance. And as with everything else in the framework, these definitions represent the consensus of the steering group organizations. So they're really an important part of this effort to bring consensus and clarity to this space. So the framework was officially launched in June, though it's been in the works for a long time, but it's now entirely available through our online platform. So if you check that out, you'll see that there's the full core principles are provided there in a sort of a broken down format. There's the operational guidance and the definitions, and here's some examples of how those will look on the platform. We've made it very navigable, so you can sort of look at specific pieces that are relevant to your work. And we've got Afi the Owl, who's a big star of our promotional video down there, who you can always ask for a search function. So that's a quick rundown of what the framework is and where it came from. and I will turn it back over to you.
Sure, thanks very much, Leah. Quick question. Obviously, you've done some work to make it relevant across a number of different geographies and for different commodity supply chains. What are the challenges involved in doing that? And how do you make it, how do you get the balance between enabling it to be relevant across different geographies and commodities, but at the same time specifically really doing a job for each one individually? How have you balanced that challenge?
Absolutely, and that's you know, clearly a constant tension as we've built this framework. Throughout it, we have really tried to keep that balance on the side of making it globally applicable. However, we have expertise in the steering group, in our coalition, from each of the geographies and commodity sectors that are the focus of this. So we had a lot of voices who would be able to say, you know, this isn't actually applicable in this context, or this is more applicable in some context than others. So we did have a lot of guidance on how to make sure that everything in the framework is at least to some extent applicable in all of the contexts that this might be used. In addition, as I've mentioned briefly, we do have these working group processes in producing regions. So we have a secretariat in Southeast Asia. We're working to build one currently with colleagues in West Africa and Central Africa. And we're also working closely with the Collaboration for Forests and Agriculture in South America. So we are basically trying to make the global framework dovetail very closely with some more grounded regional context-specific initiatives.
Sure. Okay, well, that's great. Thank you very much, indeed. And thank you also for being with us. We had a power outage in London, which caused the slides to freeze earlier on. So thanks for being with us, everybody. Okay, Philip, let me turn to you then. A similar question. What can the Supply Chain Initiative do to help strengthen and accelerate company commitments? Philip.
Well, good morning, everyone. Ian and Leah, it's nice to be with you. Thanks for everyone for having me. My name is Philip Rothrock, and I lead the research with the Forest Trends Supply Chain Initiative. And so we, over the past decade, hundreds of companies across the supply chain have stepped up and made commitments to address commodity-driven deforestation from the production of agricultural commodities. So while this has been a positive development to address deforestation, there's rarely, you know, two commitments have rarely had been similar and comparable. So when we think about this, you know, companies are, you know, we're communicating across a wide array of corporate managed and third party managed channels. So given this, Forest Trends came in, and among other work streams that we have a decade worth of experience and a track record of tracking environmental markets. So we established the Supply Chain Initiative back in 2015. So supply chain organizes company actions on eliminating deforestation from the four big commodity supply chains. Oh, next slide, please. Sorry. Four commodity supply chains most associated with deforestation. So as you can see here, these are palm, soy, timber, pulp and paper, and cattle. And these are ones that the accountability framework covers as well. Next slide. So we do this by compiling and reviewing all publicly available information companies disclose about their commodity use, their commitments on these commodities, and annual progress towards these commitments. So then we kind of distill down the most salient information to display on a simple online profile with links to the related sources of information with the full scope of company by company data residing in our back-end data management system. So, you know, next slide. Since 2015, we've greatly expanded our company tracking of the number of companies across these commodity supply chains, from producers to retailers with exposure to the big four commodities. And this means that they produce and or procure any of the commodities as part of their core business. We've also increased the number of companies with commitments for the big four commodities. To date, as you can see here, Supply Change has identified more than 865 companies believed to be the largest, most impactful, and or the most likely to have commitments. And we found that most of those 865 companies, at least 473 have commitments, which add up to 848 commitments in total and counting. So we maximize our impact and reach to decision-making stakeholders through partnerships, as Leah alluded to before. So we work with AFI and others. So for example, we've teamed up with a number of outside groups to investigate specific trends around a number of areas of interest, including four reports that we'll publish this year. I just want to call those out. So most recently, in a collaboration with Ceres, we published a briefing for investors on the number of companies with zero deforestation commitments reporting progress. And also, in conjunction with the International Finance Corporation, we will soon publish findings around sustainability commitments and the cattle industry in Paraguay. So getting back to your question, Ian, so we know that there's a growing expectation among governments, investors, corporate buyers, and civil society for companies operating across these commodity supply chains to address deforestation. And we know that 2020 remains a key deadline for a number of influential collective commitments. These include company signatories to the New York Declaration on Forests and members of the Consumer Goods Forum. Tropical deforestation has continued despite numerous company commitments to stop it. The slide that we kind of jumped past that Leah had kind of showed that deforestation is continuing as well as commitments. And so consequently, companies with deforestation risk face a growing number of demands for transparency and accountability from shareholder campaigns, media campaigns, and buyer requests. Please change the slide. So the big question that I have is, how can the private sector address these concerns and related reputational risks? So, well, as we've just heard, the accountability framework is providing companies with a new opportunity to align with company-tested operational guidance and principles in setting, acting, and reporting on deforestation-free commitments, which they have secured the support of a large coalition of actors, including some of them that are making their requests on companies. So in parallel to that, Supply Chains recently upgraded its suite of metrics to better understand the private sector leadership in this space. So in late 2018, the Supply Chains team harvested cutting-edge metrics used among all the companies that we track, and then consulted representatives from third-party scorecards, or representatives, third-party scorecards, best practice guidance documents, including the AFI, and reports from around 40 organizations. So I wanted to take this moment to thank all of those individuals and organizations, including the AFI, to make that process possible. So in summary, our data expansion include the refinement of the scope of the metrics that we collect, or the scope of the commitments we collect, and we substantially increase the number and level of detail for the metrics we collect. These metric areas include like risk assessment, implementation, monitoring, and verification, and impacts, which kind of mirror some of the topics that Leah was just mentioning. And so we now collect more analyzed data and geographically explicit data, such as commodity sourcing locations to the country level, and even where possible to subnational levels. So going forward, we aim to build our network of collaborators and partners so that we can share insights and analytics and trends. Next slide, and that's back to you.
Okay, thank you. Thanks, Philip. So yeah, you're right, 2020 has been a key deadline for some time. Any companies going to actually hit their targets?
Well, unfortunately, and I think we just released a report with Ceres on to investors, and it provided an investor briefing, and we found that amongst all the companies that we were researching, only 72 companies had zero deforestation commitments, some of which of those might align with the scope of AFI. However, only 21 of those are reporting progress. Now, the beauty of the accountability framework and other guidance is that we can now increasingly start going in and seeing how those companies are reporting to kind of see, you know, where they might align and where there might be improvements that they can make. So I think a lot of folks in the space are recognizing that 2020 is just around the corner and that they are probably not going to hit it. Some companies have, you know, maybe might have a smaller scope for their commitment, while others might have a larger scope and might be reporting less progress. So I think, you know, it's a work in progress for all companies, and there's clearly opportunities for them to grow.
I think you said, no, they're not. Is that right?
Yes. No, I would say they're not, but I think there's definitely a clear pathway forward.
Okay, thanks, Philip. There's a lot there we can come back later on. And thank you very much to everyone who's submitting questions. Please keep them coming in. We'll get to them in a few minutes. Leah, I want to come back to you now, though. I know you're working to help companies deal with some accountability challenges in particular. Can you give us some insight now into how you go about doing that?
So the focus of what we're trying to talk about today from the accountability framework side is how the AFI is working in collaboration with other initiatives and organizations to simplify, harmonize, and align the reporting space. So the framework's sort of principle and guidance on reporting is pretty simple. Can you go to the next slide? Basically, it says that companies should report regularly and publicly on all aspects of their commitments. So to give a sort of a flavor of how these principles are written, a component of Core Principle 12, which is our principle on reporting, disclosure, and claims, says that progress and outcomes related to the implementation of commitments are reported publicly on a regular basis. These reports reference and adhere to common definitions and good practices for conveying precise and verifiable information. There's some sub-principles, which include regular means at least once a year, companies should be reporting on the status of progress towards their commitments, and also that companies are disclosing information on their suppliers and supply origins. And there's quite a bit of further information in the guidance about that. So there's also operational guidance that is associated with that principle. And this operational guidance on reporting lays out four aspects of performance related to commitments that should be reported on and provides general guidance on the type of information that may be needed to report effectively on that topic. So the way that the guidance on that reporting is laid out says that companies should be reporting on exposure to environmental and social risk, on management systems and activities related to the implementation of commitments, on the degree of traceability and control in the company's supply chain, and on the outcomes of commitments related to both compliance as well as to outcomes on the ground. And for each of those, we give a good amount of detail in the operational guidance about really the elements of effective reporting related to those components. However, as we said, the AFI is not a standard. It's not a reporting system. It's not something that should be verified or reported against. Rather, the framework provides information on the definitions, norms, and practices on which companies should be held accountable. But in order to really achieve that accountability, the actual stakeholders who are holding companies accountable, whether that's buyers, financial institutions, civil society, or consumers, need to be evaluating them in ways consistent with the framework as well as with each other. So we talk a lot over at the accountability framework about this idea of closing the accountability loop. And this is really what we mean. We have companies implementing commitments that need to report effectively as described in the framework. So you've got these implementers, supply chain companies at all stages, implementing these commitments, reporting on them in ways that the framework provides ample guidance on. That information is then intended to facilitate appropriate decisions by those who influence company activities, who to buy from, who to exclude from their supply chains, who to invest in, who to campaign against potentially. But there's, as you see, a step missing from this loop. So next slide, please. And that's really the broad category of reporting, assessment, evaluation, tracking, and scoring organizations and initiatives that provide standardized information on company performance on which stakeholders can then base their decisions. And this can range from wide-reaching and public-facing organizations like Supply Change to business-to-business platforms, both not-for-profit and for-profit, sort of all of the different ways that this information is passed along, aggregated, and understood in ways that allow the stakeholders who are really going to be the ones who are holding companies accountable to make those decisions in ways that are consistent and clear and aligned with the guidance. So in order to close that loop, the accountability framework is collaborating with leading evaluation, assessment, and tracking initiatives, including Supply Change, as well as a number of other initiatives, CDP Forests, Forest 500, Global Canopy in general, ZSL Spot, just a number of organizations who are really leading the space in terms of aligning, simplifying, clarifying how companies are to be evaluated in relation to these commitments. And we've been working very closely with them to develop a set of common approaches for the assessment of company performance on topics within the accountability framework scope. So this has been an ongoing work stream. We're making a lot of progress on really further aligning these questions. For example, in the next year CDP Forest questionnaire, a large number of those questions are being adapted to align with AFI definitions and AFI guidance, AFI principles, similarly to a number of these other organizations. The goal of this is really a couple of main goals. First, to improve alignment both between initiatives and between all of these initiatives and the accountability framework, with the ultimate intention of helping companies to both report using the same metrics by which they will be evaluated, so everyone's really using the same playbook for understanding how to measure and demonstrate progress. And finally, to really facilitate using existing platforms to report on adherence with the framework. So not adding any new reporting requirements or structures, but really saying how the existing ways that companies are already reporting their progress can be used to really show alignment and adherence with the framework. As I said, Supply Change is one of our key partners in this process. So I'm going to let Philip talk a little bit more about the process from their end, and I'll pass it back.
Thanks, Leah. Lots there to come back to. We will just crack on. I want to ask, as Leah suggested, I do want to ask Philip a little more about cooperation. So, Philip, turning to you then, clearly cooperation in these areas is key, and I know that you're working with the accountability framework to align your efforts. How's that going for you?
Yeah, no, I think, Ian, it's going well. So for a little over 2 years, Forest Trends Supply Change Initiative has partnered with the Accountability Framework Initiative. We're one of many, obviously. And Supply Chain has been delighted to be able to provide ongoing technical feedback and support to the AFI. And so we've relied on insights garnered from our research on all the companies we track and from our recent methodology upgrade to support their development of the principles and operational guidance, as well as supplemental best practice materials that Leah previously mentioned. So at the same time, the AFI team has and their resources have been instrumental during our process of upgrading our metrics. So by helping to clarify, you know, important terminology and concepts, aligning approaches with other tracking initiatives, noting new information to track, and informing our prioritization of which metrics we should track. So for just in summary, you know, our data upgrade, we included a number of metrics which we identified by AFI as elements of, you know, effective reporting under the core principle 12 on progress and outcomes. So Supply Change, you know, collects risk metrics on the number of like hectares owned and controlled by companies for each commodity. So that was one thing kind of alluded to. Another is we collect metrics on commitment outcomes on the number and proportion of protected and deforested hectares. We also collect we've also made improvements on, as I mentioned before, on, you know, reflecting on how we aim to build specific evidence of implementation, monitoring and verification, and impact around these key metric areas. The metric areas that we focus on, to name a few, are land management, protection of forest, ecosystem and biodiversity, respect for human rights, and traceability. And these kind of pair well with what the accountability framework is doing. And so this is just one example I have of how AFI is kind of trying to streamline these different, different groups. So for this webinar, change slide, please. So for this webinar, I wanted to highlight how supply chains' new metrics can be used to track alignment with AFI and for other standards, and not other standards, but other processes, by giving kind of a specific example related specifically to principle 5 on supply chain management for buyers. And as an aside, I know that Leah said that it's their framework is not meant to be a certification. However, it does provide a nice bridge for companies, say, pursuing something where there might not be a certification available, or they might not be pursuing certification. So AFI provides kind of a stopgap. So under core principle 5, this example that I'm going to use, the AFI states that the origins, I quote, the origins of the materials and supply chains are expected to be known or controlled to a sufficient extent to determine that the production and processing units of origin comply with commitments, or to determine the extent and nature of the issues that must be resolved. Please change the slide. So with this in mind, for this webinar, we kind of pulled in a sample. So we, out of a sample of 125 companies, we tracked the number that report to be using one of the three methods of pursuing traceability that the AFI considers to be sufficient for traceability. The first three groupings you can see here reflect AFI's methods, while the latter two groups are not related to AFI's methods. So we found that the majority of the 125 companies did not purport to be pursuing any method of traceability for soy and cattle, while a minority did for palm and timber and pulp. This grouping is the one that's featured on the far right, as you can see there. And as you can see from the second to last grouping, a fair number of companies reported pursuit of traceability methods that do not meet what the AFI has outlined as an approach, with 8% of the companies for soy ranging to 19% for companies for palm. So these companies have the opportunity to consider how they might adjust their method to at least one of the outlined methods outlined in principle 5, or it could just be that they modify their reporting on these methods, and they can use that to demonstrate publicly their alignment with the AFI standards. And of the three methods that are sufficient under the AFI principle 5, companies most often, then this is probably not a surprise to anyone, most often relied on credible assurance systems, e.g. certification systems, capable, and the key is, linking raw material supplies with commitment compliant production areas. That's a paraphrase, but essentially, with certification systems well entrenched for palm and timber supply chains, this is not surprising. This grouping is kind of found on the far left of the figure. And then a few companies featured in the second grouping relied on tracing their commodity supplies back to the origin of production, with most being for palm and cattle supply chains. So more public attention on palm supply chains could help explain why some companies take this approach. And for cattle supply chains, specifically around beef, health-related concerns can sometimes enable companies to rely on those traceability systems. And then finally, a handful of companies reported relying on an intermediate supplier with sufficient controls for determining compliance at the source of production for any of the commodities. Sometimes companies might mention their suppliers, but only a few reported this in a way that made us think that it appeared to align with the AFI method. So Please note that AFI did include one more method of traceability that we did not include in the figure, because no companies reported tracing materials back to jurisdictions or biomes which meet environmental and social criteria of their commitments. This method is kind of an emerging as a potential approach and is up for discussion. And so please change the slide. And then to conclude, Supply Chain sees a great opportunity to collaborate with the Accountability Framework Initiative, as well as with others in this community, including those listening here, to improve tracking of companies beginning their journey of aligning with their commitments, actions, and reported progress towards AFI, or in their use of other certification systems, as well as other techniques and approaches. That's all from me, and back to you, Ian.
Thanks very much indeed. Okay, we're going to crack on now to our questions. Thanks, everybody, for sending them in. Firstly, I'd like both the speakers to identify some companies who are leaders in being more accountable regarding progress towards their supply chain goals. And also, why are they being considered leaders? Leah.
Great, thank you. Thanks, Philip, for all that great information on our collaboration. From the framework perspective, we're not in the business of really tracking and evaluating companies. That's something we're sort of really visioned in the loop, leaving to other players. I will say, we certainly have had really close consultations with a number of companies that are really seem very eager to move forward with this, to start adopting principles. I actually have to admit that I'm not really at this point sure of the extent to which I'm sort of at liberty to discuss the companies we've been consulting with on this.
Sure. But rather than that, then, why don't you tell us what characterizes the approach of the companies that you regard as leading?
Yeah, absolutely. So, a number of the companies that we've really sort of made inroads on this already are really trying to figure out how to integrate the framework into their existing system. So they're saying, here's what we're doing on monitoring. Let's walk through what the accountability framework has to say about monitoring. Let's do some, some side-by-side analysis. Let's see how we can move our systems forward. All right, here's our commitment on zero deforestation. Is everything in it really aligning with what is instructed to be in it based on, core principle one of the framework, which lays out the requirements for a no deforestation commitment. If they're not aligned, then okay, let's work together to figure out how we can refresh and reestablish our commitment in a way that's aligned. So, I think really what it comes down to for us is there are, a handful of companies that we're talking to have really so far been willing to get down to brass tacks and say, here's what we're doing now, here's what the framework is saying. This isn't going to happen in a day, but where are the places where we can really adapt what we're doing to be in line with what is now sort of being recognized as global best practice. We are having those conversations with a number of companies. We have a very large steering group of all of our organizations who have, really deep existing, many of whom have deep existing relationships with companies. So we are trying to facilitate, increased working relationships between all of our steering group organizations and companies that they work with to really take the step-by-step assessment process to move forward all of these systems into a way that's aligned with the framework. And that's really what, the way we're hoping to make a difference.
Thanks, Leah. Philip, same question to you. I'm hoping you can give us some examples. Some companies that are leaders in being accountable, and why do you think they're considered leaders?
Well, Ian, let me step back and kind of give you an analogy of how we think of this. So when students go to school, they get report cards on many different subjects. Yes, some students may have straight A's, but others might have a mix of grades. And so I think for companies that are engaging with this wide array of issues, there are going to be areas where they might be stronger or weaker in. Supply chain isn't in the business of calling out leaders per se, but we do make sure to kind of hoover up all the information available so that we can have more detailed information on approaches that may be more detailed and may provide stakeholders with more information on kind of what they're doing and some of the, you know, impacts that they may be having if, you know, a company shares them. Supply Change just collects, you know, the publicly available information that companies provide. So with that in mind, one thing that I wanted to call out is that I know that one company has, you know, been in the news, and that's Cargill. But I do want to highlight that one approach that they did disclose to their to CDP that, you know, is encouraging is that they said that, you know, when Cargill buys from a third party supplier, the third party is asked to provide GPS coordinates, among other details, for the source of the mill. So, you know, that's an example of where, you know, a company that's, you know, downstream may be requesting from its suppliers more detailed information that could then be used to determine if a company, if, you know, their suppliers are compliant with their commitment. Supply Change doesn't, you know, verify the accuracy of that, but in terms of transparency, that's a good sign that that Cargill says that they're doing that. And Supply Change collects information around scorecards and other information that may provide more nuance to, you know, some of the information and impacts that are behind that. I wanted to give another example. Actually, I recently went to the Global Roundtable on Sustainable Beef Summit, and I spoke a little bit with someone from McDonald's, Rachel, and one of the things that she had mentioned that that McDonald's does is that they are looking and reaching out to their suppliers to kind of think, you know, are these suppliers engaging in deforestation? You know, are there, you know, significant risks that we should consider for compliance? And so I think one of the things that Leah kind of mentioned is engagement with smallholders, kind of monitoring and verification. And so if a company has internal processes for monitoring, that's a good sign. Am I calling those out as leaders? No, but I am calling out leading practices, kind of similar to what Leah was saying.
Fine. That actually leads us very nicely into another question I want to put directly to Leah. Leah, what involvement have certification authorities such as the RSPO had in the AFI process, and what do you see as their role going forward, Leah? And if we keep the answer relatively brief, because I do want to get through a number of questions. Anyway, Leah.
Absolutely. So, you know, clearly the relationship between certification and the accountability framework is an important one. It's a couple fold. First of all, we are working closely with, several different parts of the RSPO process. Along with several other certification systems. And the way it's really framed is that the accountability framework is an opportunity for companies to set and achieve sort of agreed upon targets in places where certification isn't available or isn't a good option for them. But certification is a great way to meet many of the requirements of the accountability framework. So really working to make sure that companies have the ability to say, here's my material that's RSPO certified. Here's how I can show how that material is in accordance with the needs of the framework. So we're really working very hard to make that relationship as seamless as possible, because they really do fit together, in a very nice way, especially for companies that are working across multiple geographies and commodities, where in some cases certification is available for them, and in some cases it isn't.
Okay, thank you very much. Philip, back to you. Relates to the question that you answered just now. The pros and cons of public naming and shaming based on performance, how productive do you find this to be? And I think let's extend this to not naming and shaming, but also talking about the companies that are doing best. Philip.
Yeah, Ian, I think that's a really good question that a lot of different stakeholders have been grappling with. And the way I view it is there's an ecosystem of actors, and there's kind of a role to play for each different group. So what supply change does is while we don't specifically score companies, what we do is aggregate, you know, all the scores that have been reported by third parties on company commitments and performance. These include like scores like what World Wildlife does with their palm oil scorecard, their soy scorecard, disclosures to CDP and their you know, rankings. And I think providing those scores provides a benchmark and a kind of an incentive for companies to, you know, compete amongst one another. I think it also compete around sustainability. And so I think having those scorecards really helps companies have something to work towards. And I think naming and shaming is something that definitely other groups do. Supply chain does not. We take a different tack that we want to highlight how companies do overall, and it'll be clear from that information that's aggregated on, you know, supply chain profile that, you know, this company is doing well, you know, in these certain areas.
Okay.
And so I think that's particularly important with 2020 just around the corner and, you know, climate imperatives driving people forward or driving companies forward and tracking progress that we do along with those, you know, scores by others are really important.
Okay. Several of our listeners want to know more about the sort of levels of transparency you're finding. So how often when you're investigating or researching into businesses and aggregating the data, as you say, do you find evidence that companies are being deliberately non-transparent, trying to avoid disclosure? Typically, what is that?
Yeah, no, I think, you know, even for example, in that one example that I provided where we did a sampling, there are some companies where the text that they provide is very clear and, you know, they might be relying on, you know, disclosure questions from CDP or from the RSPO or, you know, increasingly they might use AFI standards and it can be clear what they're doing. Other times companies may have, you know, their information might be spread out, you know, across many different sources and they may have a lot of words in there, but you know what we're increasingly trying to focus on is quantitative data, and specifically having more details around caveats, details on, you know, monitoring system and approaches. I think, you know, the more specific companies can be, the better. And some we have a range of companies, and I think one metric that I noted was the number of companies that's, you know, say are disclosing, you know, how many hectares that they protect. You know, for producers, some of them will make note of that, but they don't call it out. So, you know, there's might be an opportunity for them to have high level numbers of here's how much, you know, how many hectares they control. And here's how many are protected year on year. Some companies, you know, do that, others do not. We're not advocating one way or the other, but having clear consistency, you know, is an opportunity for them to avoid doing that. And I think some of these standards and the AFI guidance provide that guidance to do so.
Okay. Thank you, Philip. Leah, back to you. Question puts the point quite clearly, quite succinctly, actually. AFI, another voluntary initiative, how do you argue that it's not just a distraction from, for example, a move towards regulation and mandatory due diligence for companies? What is it about the AFI that makes it relevant in the sea of other voluntary initiatives? Leah?
Yeah, that's a really important question. I mean, I think the goal of the accountability framework is to provide a resource that is available for really all of the initiatives that you've mentioned to really move forward to, you know, an end point where I think everyone, you know, feels that yes, ideally, you know, this will be something that is really addressed through regulation, through jurisdictional approaches through governance. But there's a long way to go until we get to that point. And the more we can provide resources for all of the different approaches to get there, whether that's certification, whether that's voluntary commitments by companies, whether that's other, you know, partnerships with governments or not, the extent to which we can all agree on what no deforestation looks like, how it's measured, how it's reported on, that's really widely applicable. And that's really, what the AFI is trying to do with the strength of its sort of consensus-based coalition to say, we are working with all of these organizations are working together to really sort of move the ball in the same direction. Because as you note, there's a proliferation of approaches. Everybody's trying to figure out how to, find ways to both, operate their business and also, have these positive impacts. And, this is just trying to move the ball forward on as many fronts as possible.
Okay. And what sort of feedback are you getting from companies now? I know you're a new initiative, but what sort of feedback have you been getting mm-hmm. from companies specifically as you've been developing it?
Absolutely. And I mean, again, to reiterate, this really was, this initiative arose out of sort of company demand, really, of asking of civil society, what do you want from us? How do we do this? And so we've been working very closely with companies throughout to really say, is this helpful? Is this what you're looking for? Is this a resource that you can use? And overwhelmingly, we're finding that we're getting very positive feedback, and most of the requests we're getting are for more. can you give us more information on this and more information on that? We sort of are striking a balance between putting out something that's manageable and trying to meet all of these needs. A lot of the feedback we're getting right now is really about how to, like I said, start getting down to brass tacks about what is the process of taking the framework, taking existing systems, doing some baseline sort of assessment of where they stack up, and moving it forward. And we're working hard to try to figure out how to best streamline that process from where companies first, look at the website, look at the framework, get in touch with it with us, get in touch with the steering group organization, and start to move that forward. Because this is really, really trying to be guidance to help companies move towards a goal that they've already committed to, and also to sort of reduce a lot of the uncertainty that's allowing progress not to be made. And we're getting, certainly, obviously, there are some companies who are saying, some of these requirements are quite arduous for us, and that's certainly going to be true in some cases, but that doesn't mean it's not the best practice, and that's really what we're trying to stick to. So we realize again that not everybody is going to get here overnight, but sort of putting a peg in the ground and saying this is best practice, this is what it means when you say that you're going to have a no deforestation commitment, feels like a really important piece of the puzzle.
Thanks very much. Similar question to you, Philip. Let's broaden it out a little bit. What sectors are you seeing expressing most interest in your initiative and you're finding best engagement with? And why do you think? I know you've outlined the four main commodity sectors, but which of those are you getting best feedback from?
Yeah, Ian, I think what we're finding is that there are a lot of companies with palm oil commitments, and I think that we haven't kind of investigated kind of connecting correlation, but I think it's well represented in the literature that there are, there's a lot of attention, media attention and investor attention on palm oil. So I think we see a lot more commitments in that space. And particularly because there's a well-established, standard that roughly, 20% of all palm oil is certified by the RSPO. That's one of many standards, but it shows that there's kind of wider adoption than, say, some of the other commodities. But I think we see, some movement potentially, with soy and cattle commitments, with some increasing attention around the deforestation in the Chaco. That said, one thing I did want to note is that we haven't updated this information yet, but previously we reported on this concept of dormancy, and we what this means is companies that may have a commitment, but they've allowed it to, they're not regularly reporting on progress. And one of the things that the AFI, kind of suggests is that companies report annually. And so we, and when I say report annually specifically on progress too. And so we, drawing on another of a number of factors, you know, found that roughly, you know, one in five commitments did, you know, is has remained dormant, and, you know, roughly 30% of companies did not have or had at least one commitment that went was dormant. So it's the, I think going back to your the question you asked me before, I do think that companies are able to address these things, but if they're not reporting progress, then they're going to have issues. And so I think by not companies not disclosing on specific metrics, then that's a good indication that, you know, there's opportunity for improvement. And so by increasing the number of metrics around implementation, that gives a good sense of, ooh, where are companies either, you know, falling short or falling short in terms of not acting or not reporting.
Okay. Thanks very much, Philip. I'm going to have to draw things to a close there as we are running out of time. May I thank both Leah and Philip very much for their time and insight today. And don't forget that many similar issues will be debated by experts at the Innovation Forum Sustainable Landscapes and Commodities Forum on the 20th and 21st of November in London. Full details on the Innovation Forum website, and you can save £300 if you register for conference passes before 2nd of August next week. We and our partners at Supply Change and the Accountability Framework will be in touch, not least to share a recording of this webinar and the slides so you can listen again at your leisure and share with your colleagues. For now, I hope you found the past hour interesting. Thank you for bearing with us while we had our technical problem with the power outage in London earlier on. But I've been Ian Welsh, and thank you very much for your time.